When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is George Cooper and welcome to the show. It certainly wasn't the West London derby that we anticipated. I've seen higher intensity spectacles on the last day of the Chelsea Flower Show. Neither team had anything to play for. Relegation, Europe, it was an absolute dead rubber. But at least we didn't lose. You know, you've got to look at the positives in these kind of situations. I would say normally that we've got plenty to discuss, but it's not really an awful lot. We'll try our very best to eke out a podcast, but I've got three gentlemen with me that I have no doubt will make it as entertaining, as insightful, and as fun as possible. I'm joined by the one and only Dan Cook. How you doing, mate?
Not too bad, Coops. Not too bad. A bit bored still after yesterday's game, but I'm all right.
It's the sort of deeply sort of entrenched boredom that it takes a little while to shake off. You know, it's sort of like everyone's leaving the ground with this sort of like sense of existential dread. Cam Ramsey's also with us. How you doing, mate?
Not bad, boys. I've had about 16 showers since I've gotten home last night just to get the Brentford off of me. But we're still alive and we're still kicking. It's ready to go.
We're still kicking, baby. And also AF is with us. You good, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm better because I didn't have to go to Brentford. I watched it on a stream and managed to have a couple of naps in between. So to be honest, I feel like I'm the freshest out of everybody here.
Yeah. I also missed the boat on getting a ticket. I don't know, you know, when you just sort of mess up and you're like, oh, I haven't got it. And then I actually had an offer from a mate of mine who's a Bees fan. He said, you can come and sit with me in the home end. I was like, that's a lovely offer, but I will not be doing that, Toby. But yeah, very kind. So yeah, I was glad I managed to miss it as well. I watched it on a stream. Yeah, what was really funny about this game is that obviously you watched it and then been making notes, sort of preparing for this podcast. You go on Fulham TV and they normally have a short highlights, which is about 2 minutes. And then they have the extended highlights, which is normally about between 12 and 15 minutes. 5 minutes is the extended highlights here. So like there were clips within that highlight reel that just did not warrant a clip. Like they were even scraping the barrel at 5 minutes. But yeah, anyway, let's get to the game, shall we? AF, have you got some three-word reviews you'd like to kick us off with, please?
I do indeed. Kicking us off is Rick Cardis with Wreck-It Raul. I should say I've started off with all the Raul Jimenez ones because it's his birthday and I feel like I don't want to be too harsh, but I'm going to come back and regret that later. We've got Rob Welby Love. What a surname. I didn't think I could beat my own, but there we go. Raul Misenez, which is also pushing the three-word review rule, but it was funny. Demetrix Appliances. And I don't know if that is the appliance messaging us, but it's pretty good. Should have Rabonad. And Chris B for boring. And finally, kicking us off is David Wellington with Lackluster at Legoland.
Lackluster at Legoland. It certainly was. Dan, I mean, you've I asked you the question a couple of weeks ago, what do we want from the end of the season? And you were quite vociferous in your request that we just need to beat Brentford. It's been so long since we've beaten Brentford away. Our recent record against them is quite frankly diabolical. It would be the cherry on the cake of what has undoubtedly been another brilliant season for the Whites. But we're going out with a bit of a whimper, lads. And I just wanted to ask you, how would you sum up your feelings yesterday leaving the ground, Dan?
It was quite a large shrug of the shoulders that was produced. I was with my dad and I was meeting Sammy James after the game, and I waited for him outside the ground. And once we spotted each other, I shrugged at him and he raised his eyebrows at me. And I think that's about all we could muster for the next 15 minutes as we made our way back to Clapham Junction. It's just, I think if the game had ended 15 minutes earlier, I maybe would have been more irritated because of the miss and a couple of the chances we had. But it just, as the game got longer, it got worse. And it also felt like we were approaching an inevitable Brentford winner that they didn't deserve. And so actually, by the time the final whistle went, I was a little bit relieved and also felt like we'd almost got away with one, even though we hadn't, because we got worse as that game went on. And so that was my overall feelings. Now, looking at it, I am just disappointed because Sammy raised it brilliantly on the quick take, but we've not scored against Brentford this season, nor Chelsea. And yesterday, really, we should have got a goal somewhere and we should be winning that game because Brentford were woeful, like really, really bad. And so for us to have not put them away and actually come away with a result that I think we would have left feeling a lot happier with ourselves and being able to rub it in their faces a little bit is a real missed opportunity.
Do you agree with this, Cam? Do you think that, I read your positives and negatives afterwards, really good article, do check it out on the Fulhamish website if you haven't already. I mean, I think it's fair to say that we controlled the game and deserved a lot more than the share of the spoils. Would you agree, Cam?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I don't think there was any real kind of impetus from either team going forward. It's already been hit. It's a dead rubber game. No real intent, no assertion from either strike forces, but we defended well. You know, I thought that we held the likes of Ivan Toney and Mbeumo really, really to, you know, short leashes and made it as difficult as possible we could for them. And that's quite a mean feat as well for our defensive line. And in that regard, I can't have any complaints. But to just meet Dan, I was really, really happy to get out of that ground, actually. Wasn't really devastated. I was absolutely elated because after watching us, obviously bottle a great opportunity with Jimenez, it's bread and butter opportunity for him to put the game to bed. I thought if we stuck that away, we would have had enough in us to actually see the game out. I didn't see Brentford necessarily pressing forward in the final stages, despite the fact, you know, Mbeumo was trying to get Robinson to no avail, really. Banal crosses going across the 18-yard, which were just swept up and banished by us. It's just one of those games that, you know, I just think Brentford's such a funny club, aren't they? You know, they released that war cry video beforehand as if they're going to rally and they're going to cause a real upset and just be that fall in our sides, as they always have been in the last couple of matches. I think between us, in the last couple of meetings, there's been like 13 goals in the last three Premier League games. It's ridiculous. So you were expecting something to erupt, but it never did. And it was just so annoying because the tickets were fairly difficult to get. I had to ring a few people and Don Betts came up clutch. So I have to thank the Betts for that. But I actually wish I didn't go. in a certain way because it was an absolute nightmare getting up to the ground. And on the way back, the train was just full of rugby people talking about drinking urine and all the other bits to go with rugby. So it kind of put a bit more of a dampener on the actual afternoon in that sense. I mean, if you pardon the pun. But yeah, a point is a good result against Brentford. If you look at it in that light, it just is. Because they always treat these meetings like their cup final, regardless of the fact that they say that they're over Wembley, that, you know, it's just another date in the calendar for them to meet, as it is for us. It's funny because you look at the two social media teams before the game, you had all the usual bits from Fulham, all the usual match day feeds, just, you know, squads, you know, another match in London or something like that. But Brentford was, it was just rhetoric, wasn't it, from them? It was so funny. And for them to come out and literally do absolutely nothing and we obliged to, what's the point? You know, it's everyone's on the beach. Everybody wants to get away to the Maldives, wherever it is, with their fit wives and just chill out. So, you know, fair play to them, but don't do that ever again, especially when the tickets are difficult to get hold of and you've got a lot of people there on Twitter crying about not getting one. Boys, just watch it on the streams on Instagram. Just watch it on the streams on Instagram. It's so much more fun. You can get a glass of water instead of a pint of beer if you want. It's, you know, it's a lot more wholesome for the soul and for the mind than going to a football ground and just sitting there, bored out your mind and watching Raul Jimenez bottle bread and butter chances. That's all I've got to say. That's all I've got to say on it, boys.
End the pod.
Yeah, yeah, that'll do, I think, for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Cam, just for those who haven't seen it, what was the battle cry vid that Brentford put out? I'm imagining it was just a lot of sort of dramatic music and montages of goals that they scored against us in yesteryear. Am I on the right kind of page here?
Mate, they got a rapper in, didn't they? They got like some rapper in. Who's not even from Hounslow or Brentford or anywhere like that.
It wasn't the corrupt FM boys.
Yeah, exactly. All the rude boys out there and whatnot. You know, and it's just like people just do nothing kind of like vibe they had to it. You know what I mean? It was so pathetic. And I'm so glad we're not them. I'm just so glad we're not them. Even their Hey Jude, their edition Hey Jude before the game, you know, that is also like their... That's their introduction when they're supposed to go out onto the pitch, as every team does. Like, we have bloody Moulin Rouge and, you know, things like that. But they have Hey Jude. Every dead club has Hey Jude. And they still got outsung by Fulham away. Like, we absolutely turned it on their heads, you know. They're the most pathetic fan base I've actually seen live. Like, at their gaff, at their new state of the shite gaff, you know. It was just pathetic. So they can make all the videos they want. We're just going to put the squads up and get on with it and ultimately not do fuck all as well.
I love it when Cam gets going, man. You just sit back and enjoy. I couldn't put it better myself, man. They are absolutely obsessed with us. AF, I was contemplating why it turned out to be the snooze fest that it was. And Dan, you touched upon it very well with the quick take with Sammy about how Brentford are most dangerous when they're on the counter. You know, it's those first three passes in transition and they can really hit you with the quality that they've got going forward. And Fulham were just really happy to just let them have the ball because that's when they're least dangerous. And I think tactically, I can see why Marco Silva opted for that, because it meant that we could, you know, be very organised and nullify their threat and their best chance of scoring. But then it did just lead to what was essentially just a really boring game. And I don't know, would you have rather have seen that and us get a point, or would you have opted for chaos and just thought, let's just chuck everything at it, let's have at it, let's just have a really fun derby and just, you know, all gas, no brakes?
I think there's three scenarios that could have played out here. One, when the fixture was, we're both playing volleyball on the beach. Nobody cared about that game. So that was, as you say, going to really lead to exactly what we saw, which was neither team really wanted to attack, but we let Brentford try, but they didn't really try either. So yeah, I'd much rather personally, from a spectator perspective, go for chaos. I think when you set up with Paulinho and Lukic, you can kind of, you know what we're going to do. We're going to say, cool, and run at us and let's just see how we go on our own counterattacks. Unfortunately, where that really fell down is that we would pass it out and it would be one of Willian, Pereira, Iwobi would have to make a decision. And you could see that they were tired. They had had a hot day on the beach. They did not know what to do. So they looked in front of them, they looked left, they looked right, and they went neither of those things. So it was always in between the right option. So what I would prefer to have done is gone with players that are hungry and capable at this point of the season. We've got tired wingers. We've got Willian and Iwobi, who have played too much football and are not at the point where we should be starting them every single game. We should be, regardless of whether his performances have been up to scratch, we should be starting Harry Wilson. We should be starting Adama Traore, and he proved that. So in terms of opting for chaos, I think we saw chaos later on, but far too late on. So in the next game, I know it's against Man City. I know it is. But we should vote for chaos. We should be having Adama Traore, and we should not be playing wingers that have, as I said, played too much football and can't make the right decisions in front of them.
Dan, were you concerned at the level of Willian's first half performance in particular. There were a lot of misplaced passes, and I don't think it was particularly just Willian either. It just wasn't clicking. I felt like we were just way too sloppy and just giving away some quite bad chances. And do you think this just comes down to tiredness ultimately?
Yeah, I think so. I think Willian's performances over the past 2 weeks are something that I'm willing to file under a 35-year-old who's played, you know, another full season of Premier League football and needs a break. Because I still think like the large parts of what he did were sort of classic Willian, you know, picking up clever spaces, moving well with the ball. It was just, I've never seen a player. It was like, if anyone remembers Emmanuel Eboué's cameo for Arsenal years ago, where he came on and spent 20 minutes passing the ball to the opposition and got subbed off because it was so bad. That sort of felt like what Willian was doing. Like I wrote it in the player ratings yesterday. It felt like an episode of The Traitors, where in the first half we had 10 Fulham players trying to score a goal and one Willian trying to stop Fulham from scoring. Because it just, every time we had something promising, he'd turn and he would set Brentford away on the counter-attack. And I really like, he's way too good of a footballer for that to be anything more than, I think, just an off day and tired legs. And I still think probably there's merit in keeping him, but I think we are starting to see, like, you know, it's one of those things that I think creeps in, right? Like this season, his last 5 games of the season are poor because his legs are going. And then, you know, next season it might be his last 10. I think it's just that gradual progression of a player getting older and hitting the twilight. So I think there's a decision to be made this summer over Willian, but ultimately it was a horrific 60 minutes from him. And I think I do think everyone needs to temper it a little bit though, because like there's a bit of revisionism going on over the past couple of weeks, but 2 months ago we were saying, oh my god, what would he have done this season without Willian, because he provides us with so much quality and nous. So I think people need to just rein in some of the abuse. Likewise with Alex Iwobi, because again, such a vital player for us this season, has finished the season badly, but so has most of the squad. So I'm trying to temper, I'm just trying to bring myself back to ground a little bit, because I think it's easy to get carried away with how bad at times it felt yesterday, that actually, you know, these players have still been vital for us this season and we need to appreciate that to an extent.
I don't blame the players at all. In fact, actually, I would say that I would blame our recruiting in January, and hindsight's wonderful, you know, in retrospect. But when you look at January, and we went for Broya, we didn't know that Muniz was going to turn into prime R9, but he did. But if we were to have signed a winger that was capable to come and take one of their spots, really, we've got the only wingers I think we actually have at the club are really Harry Wilson and Willian. Iwobi's not really a winger. He doesn't operate best there. He just is, because that's his way of making it into our starting 11. I think Traore probably is a winger, but he's just a different kind of gear, right? But we haven't really signed enough wingers to be able to say we can swap Willian out of those games to mean that he doesn't get to the final 5 games of the season to be completely knackered like he is now. I think that was probably poor forward planning from Fulham. And I hope that it's something we address in the summer, because it's not something we can go into next season and just saying, hey, Bobby Decherd over Reed, whenever we've got a chance on the wing, you can come in, because he's not really a winger either. I don't think with the system that we're playing and the reliance that we have on our attacking players to make the right decisions, we can't keep playing the same players who aren't quite right there.
It's just been such a shame for me that Adama Traore has spent so much of this season injured, because I feel like if we had a full season with Adama, we could, you know, seen something really quite exciting. And but yeah, as you say, something to look forward to in the summer, hopefully. It's always exciting. Like wingers, just, you know, when you see us like linked with these like exciting wingers from like Shakhtar or what have you, and it's just that's those are the only transfers that I sort of will pay attention to until the Fulham admins have come up with a pun for it, and it's all over our Twitter.
It's when that little video goes up, someone posts a compilation of someone we're linked with, and it will usually be like the first 30 seconds are like them running about a bit, and then suddenly like 45 seconds in, you just see like a thunder bastard from 40 yards and you're like, yes, get him in. This is our man. And there'll be like a couple of step overs and a flip flap and you're like, yes, bring him in.
Yeah, it's like this like god awful dubstep over the top of it.
Yeah. And then you see the stats and it's like 3 goals in 45 games or something like that. And you're like, all right. Let it go, boys.
So your team, Atletico Buble, have you ever knocked together a compilation, skill compilation video? Has anyone ever done that for you, Cam?
Nah, man, but we play against teams that bring along like the Vivo cameras or whatever they are. They think they're like SE Dons or something like that. And I remember we played a team last year. It was my last game before I get injured. And we spanked them like 6-0. And they were the ones that brought the camera down and everything like that. And they gave us the footage afterwards, man. And I got a spanker right across the target, edge of the 18. And I trust me, before I go to bed, I watch it every single night just to get myself motivated again. So I love it.
what you should have done is when you scored your banger, you should have gone right up to the camera and like blown a kiss into it, like Jesse Lingard or something
I would have done some Wayne Rooney shit, mate. I would have just grabbed it and started shaking it.
Well, we've managed to make it 20 minutes into this podcast before we mention the Raul Jimenez miss. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one, Cam. I mean, obviously there's the miss itself, which is just so disappointing, a player of his quality, and it's just a really bad piece of football. But then when you contextualize it within what it could have meant for the fan base, what it would have, it was just an absolute stinker. And I don't know if I have any more words to say on it. You know, players do make mistakes, strikers do miss, but that felt like one that he really, really couldn't miss.
It was honking, absolutely honking, you know. It's a staple trait of a striker to get the head and knee over the ball, regardless of where you are. In front of the target, penalty area, that is your stance. Like, you're not leaning back and you're not necessarily waiting for a ball to come to you. You're going to that ball and you're attacking it with everything you've got. And the way that he obviously... his posture is just completely indicative of a striker for me, which I feel probably he feels is surplus the requirement of the club. Obviously, his minutes have dried up recently. I know he's had his injury setbacks and fitness setbacks. And obviously, in between, the likes of Broja coming in. And as we've already touched on, Muniz's meteoric rise to the heights of which he is at the moment, you know. I just think he possibly sees no way back into the club because... he had a purple patch himself, didn't he, where he was knocking in some fantastic goals, that back heel, obviously at the Cottage. I think that was at the heights of his real confidence and self-assurance. But he's quite obviously had some setbacks and some real knockbacks as well in the weeks gone by. And if that were Jimenez around sort of November, you know, heading into that nice patch he had, then it would have been 1-0 and it would have been, you know, it would have ripped the net off as well. He would just be that player that would be right place, right time and right connection. But I do feel sorry for him. But I completely agree with the age aspect as well. I know that age is just a number nowadays to some players, but I don't see that in Raul. I see him being a player which is slowly going to tail off into just... a Liga MX player again or something like that, just tailing back obviously to Mexico. And I don't think he's got the capability to keep up with the Premier League anymore. And actually, if we're looking at it from a future standpoint, if we're going to be serious about progressing in the Premier League and not just being a gatekeeper, then we need to be recruiting some strikers that are either going to, you know, compete well with the likes of Muniz, who hopefully is going to continue his form into next season and beyond, or we need to get a fully fledged Premier League proven striker, which is going to completely smash, you know, Rodrigo's performances out of the water. And Jimenez just ain't going to be that guy. I mean, it's not like it's a do or die situation yesterday. It would have been lovely to win 1-0, but he was in swathes of space. It wasn't like it was a snapshot. It was a half chance. He could have taken the ball down in his stride, hung his bloody washing up, gone to the fucking bar for a pint, and he could have stuck it away without any problems at all. But he just rushed and so hurried. And, you know, I think we're all sat there thinking, bloody hell, if that were me in that situation, any of us in that stand were saying the same thing, it's a goal. But for him, it just wasn't. And I just don't see there's any real way back for him after the summer. And I do think we need to cut our losses in him because £5 million, when we bought him, it wasn't really too much of a gamble for a Premier League team to spend that money on a striker, which has been proven in the past. But it quite obviously hasn't worked out, because we needed Raul to be that leader up top, and we actually needed Muniz to obviously just learn from him. And it turns out it's going to be the other way around. Muniz has taken the initiative and he's gone, do you know what, I could be the big fish in this pond. And now Jimenez is going to be picking up the pieces in the summer. I don't see him getting back into the team whatsoever. But who knows? Who knows? But if I was part of the recruitment team, then I would cut my losses and I'll look elsewhere for a younger, more hungry striker to obviously link up with Rodrigo, test him every single day on the training ground, and ultimately improve the stock of the team as well. And yeah, Raul just doesn't do that for me.
AF, do you agree that miss was potentially a Fulham career defining moment of which there's no return for Raul?
I think so. I mean, to be fair, I don't think before that miss he was coming into the team. I think, and that's exactly what Cam's touched on there. He knows he's not coming back in. And I think the fact that what I find confusing out of this, and I don't want to blame Marco Silva because I think he's a fucking genius, but the problem here is that I don't know why he brought him on. Like, we know, I think everybody knows that it's over for Raul. Raul knows it's over. And bringing him on in a game where there actually was a bit of pressure at that point in time, where it was like, we had Adama who had just come on, right? He's absolutely battered Yaremluk into, I think that's his name, into next week. The lad's only 20. He's put this on a plate for Jimenez. And all of that pressure, I think he felt at that same time he's leaning back. It's career defining in the fact of that miss is probably where people remember it, where his career ended. But I think his career ended when Muniz's career at Fulham started. Because as soon as that happened, he dropped to right bottom in the pecking line. That means that anyone that we're going to sign over the summer goes straight above him. I think it's harsh on him to feel that it all came down to that moment. I think there's been multiple moments where he probably felt that was already over for him. And I actually feel sorry for him, because I do think that he obviously shows something in training to Marco Silva to bring him on. But I think it's probably just time that we said, right, okay, let's phase him out of the team. We'll move him on. He will find another club. And it just hasn't worked out for him, this move.
It's one that obviously we all wanted to work so badly, and one thing that you can never not growl for is his effort. Like, he's here, there and everywhere. But I mean, I think that, you know, bar that little purple patch, it's just consistently just been misfiring him. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he ends up, if he's still going to be a Fulham player after this summer. Looking at the other end of our team, Dan, I thought defensively, we were really good yesterday. Bernd Leno made a perfect 10 for clean sheets. He's got more clean sheets than Manchester City's Edison this year, which is no small feat. And bear in mind that in the eyes of a lot of Fulham fans, this hasn't been as good a season as it was last year. I don't actually know how many clean sheets he got last year, but I mean, an incredible achievement for a mid-table side. Hats off to you, Bernd. But I thought that our centre-backs, Bassey and Diop in for Wantaway, Tosin Adebayo, who's almost certainly going to be leaving this summer. But I think a really solid performance for the two of them. I think Bassey in particular, that deflection that he blocked the Mbeumo chance and managed to deflect it onto the crossbar. But I think that is a really, really important interception, a really good bit of defending. And yeah, anything that stood out particular for you, Dan? I know you were quite impressed.
I was impressed by both of them. I thought that when that Bassey moment you touched upon, where Mbeumo was sort of vaguely through him, he's sort of up against Bassey. It's the two of them one-on-one effectively. And I think it's the intelligence that Calvin Bassey shows. And I've spoken about this a few times recently, that he really seems to be growing into like a fully well-rounded centre-back. Because in that moment, not only does he have the pace to match Mbeumo, he has the intelligence to know that do not let Brian Mbeumo cut back onto his left foot, show him wide, cut down that angle and see what he can do on his right foot. And I think he did everything perfectly there. And that's, you know, what more can you ask from your centre-back? To, you know, we've got Tim Ream, who would have shown Mbeumo down the line but maybe been burnt. And then you've got, you know, maybe a Tosin who has the physical capabilities but maybe goes a bit rash. And I think Bassey in that moment was calm, composed, and in what is the one situation you don't want to be in as a centre back is being run at by a winger slash forward. He dealt with it fantastically, and I thought his performance was superb. I gave Issa Diop the man of the match solely because I think Calvin Bassey gave the ball away a few times, but like real nitpicking, because overall he was superb as well. But Issa Diop, man, wow. Like, one game he's had, before yesterday in the past few months, effectively. And he was shaky in the first 30 minutes against Palace, but he was perfect against Bees. And when you think that that's all this Brentford team really have going for them, right, is their front three. They've got, like, for their front three and maybe a couple in midfield in Mathias Jensen, who wasn't playing, and Norgaard. And to have completely shut them down, given them basically nothing, the awareness to cover for Leno in that first half when Lewis Potter sort of dinks it over the keeper and Issa Diop just covers and heads out for a corner, composed. There were a lot of times when he was superb aerially, Issa, where, you know, winning headers from crosses. But also, I just, from what I remember in the game, there was quite a few times when Brentford fizzed in a low cross into the box along the floor. And it was always Issa Diop there, hoofing it away, putting out for a corner, just keeping things simple, no frills, just sensible defending. And you can't really ask for much more. And I think it makes me happy. I think it makes a lot of Fulham fans happy, because we're all pretty annoyed at Tosin right now, aren't we? And so I think maybe in Tosin's mind, he probably would have found it quite nice that he's moved out of this team and then Issa Diop comes in and shows us all how important Tosin is. But actually, that's not happened at all. Tosin's out of the team. Diop's come in and we've defended better, which I'm not saying Issa Diop's a better footballer than Tosin, because I still, you know, I'm still a big fan of him, but it's quite a nice moment for us to be like, go, mate, you know what? If you want to leave, leave, because we've got other options.
I think also massive shout out to Timmy Chestnuts, because to be honest, he gave Issa more defending to do. I noticed this. I love Timmy Chestnuts, right? But he does remind me a bit of a border collie that's running after a tennis ball. You know, where it goes over their head and he turns around and he's like, oh, it's gone. And that's the only thing about his game that I don't like. But the great thing is about that is it gave Issa Diop the chance to shine, because as Dan kept mentioning those low crosses, the reason they kept coming in is because these long diagonal balls were going over Timmy Chestnuts. He was chasing after it and then Issa Diop was cleaning up after him. So fair play, Timmy. It's a 6 or 7 out of 10, as always, every single game. But you allow this at the odd to look like a 9 out of 10. And that's what teamwork's all for, right?
I think AF makes a great point, though. I've noticed this as well. Timothy Castagne is really sus if a raking crossfield diagonal ball goes over his head. We've seen it like quite a few times over the past, I want to say like 4 or 5 months. And it started, I think, with that Carabao Cup semi-final against Liverpool, where their yes. goal came from a ball out to Luis Diaz. And it's happened time and time again. And I think teams have cottoned onto it, because he's not the most physically imposing. So if you ping that diagonal, he's not massively likely to win the header. But he also then, once the ball reaches the winger, he never seems to be sure whether he should stick or twist. And it means that he ends up in no man's land, where he approaches at speed and then looks to stop. And then at that point, he's sold himself. And it does seem to be happening more and more. And I do really like him, but that wasn't something that happened to Kenny Tete. And so it's something that we need to see improvement there, because it's so easy for teams to exploit that. It's, you know, a long diagonal in the Premier League is bread and butter for the quality of midfielders. And people will keep on hitting that pass if they work out that Fulham are suspect from it.
I hadn't noticed that from old Chestnut. He doesn't have many negative aspects to his game, but yeah.
I think that's why it's so clear, right? It's because he hasn't got any negatives, really. When it comes to going forward, I don't think I'd say, do you know what, I'd prefer Kenny Tete at any point in time. Maybe when we had Mitro, because of his deep crosses were quite useful, but realistically, I haven't thought, oh, I'd need him back in the team. It's only in those one-on-one situations where we just know that we've been blessed with a one-on-one defender at the when he's at the height of his game. Kenny Tete is unbeatable. And what we've been used to seeing on that right flank is suddenly a little bit different. I still think Castagne is probably a better defender than most right backs in the Premier League. Unfortunately, we're just at a point where we had just seen something slightly better maybe last season. And that's why that bit of his game where he does get done on the diagonal, he does get done on these one-on-ones, it just looks a little bit obvious to us. It happens to not Tommy Robinson, definitely not the same guy, to Jedi. I mean, it's very right wing, but it's a very different kind. But on the right wing, Jedi gets done quite a lot. But the problem is that Jedi can turn around and then chase anybody back. It actually harks back to my favourite point, is that Jedi got done on the break. I think it was the final 5 minutes, but we got one of the best moments of the game that I don't think would have popped up on any highlights reel. And it's Jedi running back, and he's not even going to catch their attacker. But Traore comes out of nowhere and he's got like at least a 3 meter, head start that he has to try and make up that ground, and he still does it. So it answers the question for us, is like, maybe Adama Traore should actually, if he was at right wing, I still think he could make up for Timmy Chestnuts when he's losing these one-on-ones, because he'd get back from wherever he is on the pitch. So maybe that's the point we have to do forward.
he looked really good when he came on the 65th minute, I believe. AF, you sort of touched upon him earlier, Traore. Do you expect to see him start against City? We all know he loves playing against Manchester City. Got that famous brace for Wolves that time, and that famous win at the Etihad. Chaos theory, should we just go for him?
You've got to. Like, I don't see, because in my opinion, I would love to see Harry Wilson start, but when you have a 25-minute cameo, not long enough, by the way, in a game that is piss poor and you still look decent, you've just earned your spot for the next game. And that's what Marco should say to him. He said, with what you did there, you've earned your spot. We'll see what you do with the start. I know he's had his injury problems, and maybe that's been hanging over for him from a fitness perspective, but I am flabbergasted that we've got a player of his quality and it hasn't started more games for us. So why not do it against the potential champions in waiting? It'll be good fun to see him against Man City, because to be honest, I would say that their left side is probably their weakest. If you played him at right wing, I probably think it's an area that we could get to them. Defensively, I don't think they're quite as strong on that area. Whereas if you're playing him against Kyle Walker, as fun as it would be to watch for everybody to watch, I don't think it's going to be as good for Adama. But I've got him on the back of my Fulham shirt. I will be wearing my Fulham shirt proudly. And when he scores the winner, then everyone will be laughing then, because they've been laughing at me all season with an Adama shirt.
Do you tuck it in and oil up your arms?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I'm just waiting for somebody. I mean, my arms are pretty big as well, but it's a podcast, so you can't really see that. But to be completely honest, if somebody saw me in an Adama Traore shirt, they're not going to mistake me for him, put it that way. I'm potentially the slowest runner in the whole Johnny Haynes stand. But I am also quite big, so maybe they're just thinking he's a unit. Do I tuck it in, though? No, I've got a very different body to Adama Traore.
Not that different, though. Not that different. What were you going to say, Dan?
I'm not sure how much Marco Silva likes Adama Traore. This is the thing that I keep on arming and ahhing over, because we all see it. Everyone in world football knows the qualities that Adama Traore brings. But I also think he's an acquired taste for managers, because you need to be a specific type of manager to be okay with a little bit of a wild card. And Marco Silva is meticulous, right? He wants his players doing very specific things. And you see it with players like Rodrigo Muniz. Marco gives him a fairly hard time, but is constantly on his case because he wants him to be in specific areas of the pitch, doing specific things, playing specific passes. And Adama Traore doesn't bring you that. He brings you chaos, as we've spoken about. He becomes a magnet to the ball, because we saw it in that second half. There were times when Fulham were doing whatever they could to work it out to the right wing, because you just want to give him the ball and let him do something. And I think that sees sort of general structure break down a little bit. And for a manager like Marco, I don't know if that's something he wants or likes. And that's where I wonder, that's why we're not seeing as much as him as we want to, because I wonder if Marco looks at it as detrimental to our overall structure. I disagree. I love having him on the pitch. I love having someone like him at Fulham, because it's fun, it's exciting. And I want him to just sort of be freed and just be like, just go and do what you do best. But then there's this Marco sort of sensible, nitpicky guy who really has, like, he has his favourites and he has players he trusts and he needs them to do these specific things. And I wonder if that's why we don't see as much of Traore.
But I guess on the contrary to that, it would be all the more reason to play him in these final two games, where we've just got nothing really to lose, and we can perhaps like have a bit of fun and try out some new things.
Before we go to questions, I feel like we could have a little chuckle about Ivan Tony and Brentford, because I've never seen a footballer give less of a shit on a football pitch. Oh my God. That guy hates Brentford more than all of us combined. Yeah. Like, he has zero. And I can't believe Thomas Frank left him on. All he did was walk around the pitch. And I think the only player he got, the only person he got close to all game was the referee. All he did was whinge at the referee, didn't contribute, didn't put a shift in. He didn't lead the press. He made other people press for him. It was embarrassing. Like, what a way for your legend, your hero of your club to really piss on it and just be like, I don't care.
The guy that's jested about moving to Real Madrid, you know, the wannabe Los Blanco, like a little lost bell end out there. You know, it was so good to see him whimper under challenges from the likes of Issa Diop and Calvin Bassey. And he wants to be playing in La Liga against some of the best talent that Europe has to offer next season. What tosser. What an absolute tosser. He deserved everything he got on that pitch yesterday. And if he does want to bother for Brentford, he can't bother at all. What a tosser.
Just to put this into the stats perspective, right? Because everyone loves a good stat. He was shit. But other than that, we have expected goals of 0.05, which wow. is absolutely the worst in Brentford's team on that day. And I know XG is a bit of a point at this point in time, but one shot on target, one shot blocked, 36 touches, and I don't remember a single one of them.
He hasn't scored in 10 games.
Yeah, 10 games is pathetic. Like, if it was 10 games and he genuinely gets a move to a big clubs are stupid.
Yeah, But for his sake, he's got the hope that no future admirers were watching, because it was an absolute stinker of a performance. It was the sort of performance that he's like slowly becoming like a Fulham legend, just with the way that he's sort of treating Brentford. He's always hated Brentford, though. He's notorious for it. You remember that video where someone's filming him and they say, what do you do? He's like, I'm a professional footballer. He's like, who do you play for? He goes, yeah, no one exciting. And then obviously there was all the stuff where he got filmed saying fuck Brentford and stuff. Like, he just genuinely hates it there, doesn't he? Like, the whole of the Brentford fan base is just being like cucked, and they just don't realise it. Yeah. It's a, cut the loss. I know a big portion of Brentford fans are calling for him to be dropped, and I don't blame them at all. It's a disgrace. I think that Frank really needs to buck his ideas up, basically. Anyway, it's enough about Brentford, but yeah, no, it was definitely worth mentioning, Dan. What a way to end part one. Don't go anywhere, because we'll be back answering some of your questions.
Hello, it's Sammy here, and Fulhamish is backed by NordVPN, which is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows and films which aren't available in your region by just switching your virtual location to a country which is showing the event. And right now, we've got an exclusive deal which you can get by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. They'll give you a huge discount off your plan, plus 4 additional months all for free. Now, my dad actually had a perfect usage case for NordVPN the other day. He was out in Spain, but he wanted to watch the match of the day highlights of when Fulham beat Southampton 2-0. So he knows I've got an account. He dropped me a text and I gave him my logins. And that's absolutely fine, because you can use one NordVPN account on up to 6 devices. So he logged into NordVPN, switched his location, and watched Alexander Mitrovic bag on his return in glorious Technicolor on his iPad. Now, NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, and there is a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you decide it's not for you, then no worries. To get that exclusive deal that I mentioned of 4 free months plus an additional discount, head to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. That's nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Hello, it's Sammy here, and this episode of Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. Now, NordVPN is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available where you are by switching your virtual location of your phone, tablet, or laptop to a country which is. Particularly perfect for those 3 p.m. kickoffs which aren't televised in the UK. And right now, you can get an exclusive discount by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Not only will you benefit from their already huge discount, but you'll also get an extra 4 months for free. You can use one account on up to 6 devices. Also, it's completely no risk thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to get that special rate plus 4 free months, go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish or hit the link in the description of this podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's the Fulhamish Podcast. Coops here. I'm joined by Dan, AF and Cam. What a lineup. Right, we've got some questions here for you. Thank you very much to all those who got in touch. We've had a few that were there with a similar theme. I'll chuck this to you, Dan. So Adam asks, will Marco really integrate any of the academy products into the first team next year? Barca Valio, he's been really reluctant till now. On that note, E. Gray asks, what is it with Marco not rotating in these late season games? We have nothing to play for and we're not seeing any young or new names on the team sheet in any of our games. So, yeah, so it's a question of rotation and also bringing in some youth, which, I mean, logic would dictate that these final games would be the time to do it. I think that what better experience can you give to young academy grads going up against the potentially future champions? Let's face it, future champions, well, current champions and will be again this season champions. What is it about, do you think, Marco's reluctance to bring in some of the youth? Because, I mean, it does seem like it's the perfect time. And I think a few people are kind of starting to raise this question now, more and more. I'm hearing it. What do you reckon, Dan?
I think there's maybe two aspects to the first point about why you're not bringing in promising youth now. And I think that comes from the fact that on one side, probably our three best youth prospects are out on loan at the moment. So if you look at Stansfield, Harris, Godot, they're all out on loan. And I think they're probably the closest maybe to a first team role. I think the second thing is, and we've heard this through reports of people who know Marco, have spoken to Marco, he's not big on playing youth. He has an idea. His philosophy sits at players that hit their peak at 27. He wants players who are in and around that age. And I think this maybe goes back to what we were talking about when it comes to Adama Traore, this idea of trust and having a player who you know is going to stick to what you want them to do, to have a level head and to also have sort of peaked physically and mentally. And it is a genuine thing that seems to stick with Marco, is that he is not a fan of young players. It's a little bit frustrating because we all love seeing homegrown talent come through. We also love picking up a 21-year-old Croatian from Dinamo Zagreb who could come and do absolute bits, but that doesn't seem to be the way he likes to operate. And it's something we probably have to accept. I think next season, I would expect Jay Stansfield to come into the squad and probably feature fairly heavily off the bench. But I wouldn't expect to see much more from Marco. We've now seen 3 years of consecutive football where we've hit the end of the season, there's not much to play for, and youth players don't get a look in. And that comes down to his preference for players. In terms of rotation, I agree. I think we'd all maybe like to see players tested out, other people given a bit of a run. But we'd also be fuming if we'd have rotated against Brentford and lost, right? Like how stiff would we feel right now if we'd have, played Tim Ream and Fodo Ballo-Touré and people against Brentford and they'd have done us 2-0, we'd have been really angry. So there's two sides to that, isn't there?
I don't know. I'd say on the Ballo-Touré point, like he's one that I've actually thought, because the reason I think about this is because Robinson could feasibly go in the summer. There are other players that could feasibly go in the summer. And from the rotation perspective, I would want to see how we do without some of those players. It doesn't mean they're definitely off, but it's just being like, what happens if we don't play Anthony Robinson for a game? Like, is it the end of the world? Is it not? And we don't currently have that answer. And I don't really want to find out on the first day of next season when he's gone to Liverpool or something like that. I think that's my only point apparent around rotation. I get where he's at with bringing youth into it. As you say, they're all out on loan. Also, should put some respect on Tyrese Francois' name.
Yeah, we do have an incredible amount of academy talent currently out on loan. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys saw Gordon Davies said that he's predicted Jay Stansfield to be the next all-time Fulham goal scorer. So, I mean, and he would know. So, yeah, ones to watch for the future, that's for sure. A bit more of a light-hearted one. I'm going to chuck this one out to all of you. Chris asks, best goal and match of the season? I think goal, it's very hard to look much further than the scissor kick from Muniz. And match of the season, yeah. Again, I think the Tottenham game for me was certainly the most fun. What do you guys think, Cam?
I think game of the season for me, just for the, obviously, the calendar occasion of it, was Arsenal at home. Beating them on New Year's Eve was an absolute treat and kind of putting a little bit of a dent into their title hopes as well. So I was really, really happy with that result. And obviously, there was a good knees up afterwards as well, especially coming from a really torrid 3-0 defeat away at Bournemouth as well. It just atoned quite nicely heading into the new year. So that was awesome. And I like Arsenal, so I've got no real problem with Arsenal. But that is a huge, huge, huge scalp for us, because how often do we really beat a top four team? And Arsenal, regardless of the perils and the troubles I've had in the last couple of years, are still a top four team. Goal of the season for me, it's really hard, but I would agree. It's got to be Muniz, man. That saucy little scissor kick of his. And it just sparked a mini, mini revival in that game, really, didn't it? Where we thought, this is it. This is a comeback of all comebacks. And we're going to end up winning this out of absolutely nowhere. But it just rubber stamps the quality of the actual striker itself. I mean, we've seen his compilation videos in Brazil. You know, I know it's a different kettle of fish entirely, but he has scored goals like that before, and he has tried it before as well. So it was so lovely to see it come off with such impact and beauty. You know, unbelievable. I wasn't there, but I know a few of my mates were there, and a couple of them actually left early, but a couple of them stayed on as well. And they said the scenes were unrivaled, absolutely unrivaled, because that's like a Hollywood goal, isn't it? It's not just a header. It's not just a well-hit standard volley. That is somebody just going, do you know what, fuck it, I'm having this. And if it comes off, it comes off. If it don't, it don't. And boy, did it come off. And that away end just looked like absolute mayhem. So, yeah, it's got to be a big rod scissor kick for me, goal of the season.
Yeah. Are we all agreeing the Muniz scissor kick? Has anyone else got any other suggestions? His head.
I'd go with Harry Wilson against West Ham. Like,
that was a beautiful
goal.
I think that has to come high up. Like, for me, the game of the season is beating Arsenal, on our own patch. I think considering that Arsenal could still win the title, that could be an even more important result to say that we did beat them. And there's still the possibility we beat Man City on Saturday. But for me, goal of the season was probably Harry Wilson. I just love a long range shot. I love an overhead kick at the best of times as well. But at the same time, if you have a long range pinger, they just sound better when they really hit the net. Do you know what I mean? Hoping that, you know, we get another one before the end of the season that we can celebrate to that level.
You know, it sounds like chain link, doesn't it? Oh, it's amazing.
Can I give goal of the season to something that wasn't actually a goal? Because if Adama Traore had dinked Aaron Ramsdale at the Emirates at 2-2 in added time, when he burnt Saliba, ran through and just lifted it into Ramsdale's face, if that hits the back of the net, that would have been goal and match of the season all in one beautiful moment. But I think I agree. I think for me, probably Roddy's scissor just nudges Wilson's. For game of the season, I'm probably, for me, it's Old Trafford away. It's that 2-1 win at Manchester United. That was something special and a way of like alleviating some demons that we've had there in the past couple of years. It was just a beautiful moment. And then the only other thing that for me that rivals that, it's between that and the quarterfinal at Goodison of the Carabao Cup.
Yeah,
to win on penalties at Goodison Park was just like, I'll never forget as we stepped up, as Tosin stepped up for the winning penalty, being held in the arms of a really, really massive guy stood in the row behind me, who I have no idea what his name was, but he cuddled me in his belly, patted my head, and he said, "It's going to be all right, mate. It's going to be all right." And it was, and it was amazing. And so it's between that and Old Trafford for me.
We've had some good games this year, haven't we? Like when we look back at the season, there have been some really, really special moments.
We're a moments team.
I'm agreeing with Dan, actually. I agree with Dan. I'm going to scratch it. Arsenal was amazing, but Old Trafford, that's era defining for Silver, really, isn't it? So yeah, Old Trafford, actually, that was a hell of a win.
How late in the game it was as well. For the sake of the pod, I think Mooney's goal, and then I think Old Trafford's, we'll say, as the four of us, our little vote. If you do think different, do get in touch with us. Got just a couple of more quick ones. Paul Budd asks, given it's highly likely that Luton and Burnley are joining Sheffield United in the Championship, which one player do you think we would be eyeing up as a target from each club? AF, is there anyone that is top of your wish list?
I've said it on a previous pod. I'll say it again. Let's get Alfie Doughty from Luton Town. I think that he's probably where I'd be looking at, regardless of whether Robbo leaves. Maybe I'm obsessed with left backs. Maybe I'm Don Betts in disguise. But I would like Alfie Doughty from Luton would be on my shopping list. If it was going from Sheffield United, I'd be looking at Gustavo Hammer. We were looking at him before. He made the wrong choice. That's fine. Hammer time. Let's have it. And then, when it comes to Burnley, I'll be completely honest and say that I'm sure that there are people that we would potentially want there. But let's just go through it. If we were to get someone like Fofana up front, I mean, fine. It's a potential. But I actually don't. I think that would stifle Muniz's development. I don't want him coming in. I don't want any of their midfield. Personally, I'm not really bothered about Sander Berge. He had his chances. It's not something that I would want in our midfield. And working my way across it, I think they're all best off at Burnley. I don't actually want any of that team. So I'll pass on the opportunity there. But I'm sure others might have picks.
I want Sander Berge. I think Sander Berge is in that box-to-box role, is silky and physical and has creative qualities as well as box-crashing, physical, getting in amongst it qualities that I think fit into this Silver side really well. I agree with AF, Alfie Doughty and Gus Hamer, yeah. But I guess the other one that wouldn't technically be from Sheffield United, but like we've said it for like 4 years, could we please just be linked with Ben Brereton Diaz? Maybe, because I reckon he'll be available for a snip this summer. And what we want, a goal-scoring left winger who can maybe also play through the middle at times if we need a bit of rotation or something different up top. He's not as maybe as good as everyone thought he was going to be like 2 years ago when he really started firing at Blackburn, but I still think he has proved in this cameo half a season back in the Prem that he's good enough. And he's playing against, like, amongst some of the worst Premier League footballers in history. So I feel like he'd do all right in this side and gives us that versatility. It's like Alex Iwobi, right? We signed Alex Iwobi and he solved like four different options for us in one signing. Brereton Diaz does something fairly similar and it just feels like a no-brainer, but so much of a no-brainer that Fulham won't do it.
It's just too hard. We've been crying out for this one for quite some time. The old ages. BBD debate. Yeah, I'd love to see him at the club. It'd be the most versatile sort of like attacking sort of collection of players that we'd had in a long time.
We all dream of a team of Bobby Deck or Dover Reeds. We could just sign every player who has his qualities.
Cool. We got one last question before we wrap up for today. Here for the Fulham, our very own Vas Malik asks, what did you have to do to wash the Brentford off after the game? Cam, have you got any special techniques to get rid of that Brentford feeling?
Well, like I said, I had 16 showers basically when I got home and basically just getting all the Dove soap I possibly could do and blending it and drinking it. And I came up nice, to be quite honest with you. Bubbles coming out my arse. But that doesn't really matter, to be quite honest with you, because we are Fulham and we are cleaner. And that is the overriding joy of being one of us.
Yeah, I have to say, like, the G-Tex, obviously, it's in queue now, obviously. So a queue is quite nice.
Yes, lovely new build flats as well.
It still ain't it though, is it? You know,
it still ain't it. No, I agree with that.
It's not Bishop's Park, man. Like,
nah.
Like you're walking through people's front. You're walking through people's living rooms to get to the ground, man. Like all of their marbled floors and stuff like that, and all their basic, you know, balconies. Like, we don't have any of that around there. All we've got along Stevenage Road is houses that are worth 45 million quid and people that don't come out their front doors. It's bliss. It's beautiful.
Well, the houses on Stevenage Road are worth more than our strikers. But yeah, what were you saying, Dan?
I just don't think it gets spoken about enough, actually, like what a high weirdos quota Brentford have. Like their fan base is full of rock. Like, what, expecting Ronans is so high for them. It's, I don't know what it is, but they are just odd. XW is like, they're an odd little fan base. They really are. I think them and Luton are the two fan bases where you very rarely meet a Luton or a Brentford fan, but you know when you've met one. You can tell you quite quickly.
I've never actually met one in the flesh, and it was nice to meet all 13 of them yesterday. You know, that was absolutely gorgeous. So thanks for turning up, guys.
Yeah, until next time. Obviously, Fulham's record in West London derbies has left a lot to be desired this year, but there is always next year, so something to look forward to. Maybe we can right a few wrongs. Before we wrap up today, AF, have you got a favourite three-word review that you would like to crown?
I do. I mean, I can't go without naming it Lackluster at Legoland. So thank you, David Wellington. That'll be the name of the pod for today.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, AF, as always. Great to see you, man.
Yeah, it was lovely to be on.
Dan Cook, good stuff.
Cheers, Coops.
Have you got anything planned for the rest of the bank holiday weekend?
I do. I'm off to Greece. I will not be watching a Manchester City game. I will be sat on a balcony.
Oh, I was wondering whether you would be joining Avas on the river cruise for the Manchester City game, but we'll see how that one pans out. And Cam Ramsey, great to see you, my good man.
Nah, thanks for having us back, boys. It's been a little while. I'm going to go cook some steak now and have some Malbec, just like Farrell Monk would want me to do.
Absolutely. That sounds divine. Have a great rest of your bank holiday weekend, ladies and gents. Sammy will be back on Thursday to preview the big one against the champions. We'll see how that one goes. Let's rule for chaos. Let's do it. Right. Have a good week. See you later, lads. You whites.